Chapter 44. In a measure kept her warm during the few minutes' adventure, but that beatific interval was over. It suddenly occurred to her to try persuasion, and accordingly she whispered in his ear, with as much firmness and decision as she could summon, "Let us walk on, darling," at the same time taking him suggestively by the arm. To her relief, he unresistingly acquiesced. Her words had apparently thrown him back into his dream, which thenceforward seemed to enter on a new phase, wherein he fancied she had risen as a spirit, and was leading him to heaven. Thus she conducted him by the arm to the stone bridge in front of their residence, crossing which they stood at the manor house door. Tessa's feet were quite bare, and the stones hurt her, and chilled her to the bone. But Claire was in his woolen stockings, and appeared to feel no discomfort. There was no further difficulty. She induced him to lie down on his own sofa bed, and covered him up warmly, lighting a temporary fire of wood, to dry any dampness out of him. The noise of these attentions she thought might awaken him, and secretly wished that they might. But the exhaustion of his mind and body was such, that he remained undisturbed. As soon as they met the next morning, Tess divined that Angel knew little or nothing of how far as he had been concerned in the night's excursion, though, as regarded himself, he may have been aware that he had not lain still. In truth, he had awakened that morning from a sleep deep as annihilation, and during those first few moments in which the brain, like a Samson shaking himself, is trying its strength, he had some dim notion of an unusual nocturnal proceeding. But the realities of his situation soon displaced conjecture on the other subject. He waited in expectancy to discern some mental pointing. He knew that, if any intention of his, concluded overnight, did not vanish in the light of morning, it stood on a basis approximating to one of pure reason, even if initiated by impulse of feeling, that it was so far, therefore, to be trusted. He thus beheld in the pale morning light the resolve to separate from her, not as a hot and indignant instinct, but denuded of the passionateness which had made it scorch and burn, standing in its bones, nothing but a skeleton, but nonetheless there. Claire no longer hesitated. At breakfast, and while they were packing the few remaining articles, he showed his weariness from the night's effort so unmistakably that Tess was on the point of revealing all that had happened. But the reflection, that it would anger him, grieve him, stultify him, to know that he had instinctively manifested a fondness for her, of which his common sense did not approve, that his inclination had calm promised his dignity when reason slept, again deterred her. It was too much like laughing at a man, when sober for his erratic deeds during intoxication. It just crossed her mind too, that he might have a faint recollection of his tender vagary, and was disinclined to allude to it from a conviction, that she would take amatory advantage of the opportunity it gave her of appealing to him anew not to go. He had ordered by letter a vehicle from the nearest town, and soon after breakfast it arrived. She saw in it the beginning of the end, the temporary end, at least, for the revelation of his tenderness by the incident of the night raised dreams of a possible future with him. The luggage was put on the top, and the man drove them off, the miller and the old waiting woman expressing some surprise at their precipitate departure, which Claire attributed to his discovery that the millwork was not of the modern kind which he wished to investigate, a statement that was true so far as it went. Beyond this, there was nothing in the manner of their leaving to suggest a fiasco, or that they were not going together to visit friends. Their route lay near the dairy from which they had started with such solemn joy in each other a few days back, and as Claire wished to wind up his business with Mr. Crick, Tess could hardly avoid paying Mrs. Crick a call at the same time, unless she would excite suspicion of their unhappy state. To make the call as unobtrusive as possible, they left the carriage by the wicket leading down from the high road to the dairy house, and descended the track on foot, side by side. The wiry bed had been cut, and they could see over the stumps the spot to which Claire had followed her when he pressed her to be his wife. to the left the enclosure in which he had been fascinated by his harp, and far away behind the cow stalls the mead which had been the scene of their first embrace. The gold of the summer picture was now gray, the colors mean, the rich soil mud, and the river cold. Over the barton gate the dairyman saw them, and came forward, throwing into his face the kind of jocularity deemed appropriate in Talbothays, and its vicinity on the reappearance of the newly married. Then Mrs. Crick emerged from the house, and several others of their old acquaintance, though Marion and Reddy did not seem to be there. Tess valiantly bore their sly attacks and friendly humors, which affected her far otherwise than they supposed. In the tacit agreement of husband and wife, to keep their estrangement a secret they behaved as would have been ordinary. And then, although she would rather there had been no word spoken on the subject, Tess had to hear in detail the story of Marion and Reddy. The latter had gone home to her father's and Marion had left to look for employment elsewhere. They feared she would come to no good. To dissipate the sadness of this recital, Tess went and bade all her favorite cows goodbye, touching each of them with her hand, and as she and Claire stood side by side at leaving, as if united body and soul, there would have been something peculiarly sorry in their aspect to one who should have seen it truly, two limbs of one life, as they outwardly were, his arm touching hers, her skirts touching him, facing one way, as against all the dairy facing the other, speaking in their adieu as he, and yet sundered like the poles. Perhaps something unusually stiff and embarrassed in their attitude, some awkwardness in acting up to their profession of unity, different from the natural shyness of young couples, may have been apparent, for when they were gone Mrs. Crick said to her husband how unnatural the brightness of her eyes did seem, and how they stood like waxen images and talked, as if they were in a dream. Didn't it strike ye that 'twas so? Tess had always somewhat strange in her, and she's not now quite like the proud young bride of a well-be-doing man. They re-entered the vehicle, and were driven along the roads towards Weatherbury and Stackfoot Lane, till they reached the Lane Inn, where Claire dismissed the fly and man. They rested here a while, and entering the vale were next driven onward towards her home by a stranger who did not know their relations. At a midway point, when Nuttlebury had been passed, and where there were crossroads, Claire stopped the conveyance and said to Tess, that if she meant to return to her mother's house it was here, that he would leave her. As they could not talk with freedom in the driver's presence he asked her to accompany him for a few steps on foot along one of the branch roads. She assented, and directing the man to wait a few minutes they strolled away. "Now, let us understand each other," he said gently. "There is no anger between us, though there is that which I cannot endure at present. I will try to bring myself to endure it. I will let you know where I go to, as soon as I know myself. And if I can bring myself to bear it, if it is desirable, possible I will come to you. But until I come to you, it will be better that you should not try to come to me." The severity of the decree seemed deadly to Tess. She saw his view of her clearly enough. He could regard her in no other light than that of one who had practiced gross deceit upon him. Yet could a woman who had done, even what as he had done, deserve all this? But she could contest the point with him no further. She simply repeated after him his own words. "Until you come to me, I must not try to come to you?" "Just so. May I write to you?" "Oh yes, if you are ill, or want anything at all. I hope that will not be the case, so that it may happen that I write first to you. I agree to the conditions, angel, because you know best what my punishment ought to be. Only don't make it more than I can bear." That was all she said on the matter. If Tess had been artful, had she made a scene, fainted, wept hysterically, in that lonely lane, notwithstanding the fury of fastidiousness with which he was possessed, he would probably not have withstood her. But her mood of long-suffering made his way easy for him, and she herself was his best advocate. tried to enter into her submission, which perhaps was a symptom of that reckless acquiescence in chance too apparent in the whole d'Urberville family, and the many effective chords which she could have stirred by an appeal were left untouched. The remainder of their discourse was on practical matters only. He now handed her a packet containing a fairly good sum of money, which he had obtained from his bankers for the purpose. The brilliance, the interest in which seemed to be Tess's for her life, only if he understood the wording of the will, he advised her to let him send to a bank for safety, and to this she readily agreed. These things arranged, he walked with Tess back to the carriage, and handed her in. The coachman was paid and told where to drive her. Taking next his own bag and umbrella, the sole articles he had brought with him hitherwards, he bade her goodbye, and they parted there and then. The fly moved creepingly up a hill, and Claire watched it go with an unpremeditated hope that Tess would look out of the window for one moment. But that she never thought of doing, would not have ventured to do, lying in a half-dead faint inside. Thus he beheld her recede, and in the anguish of his heart, quoted a line from a poet, with peculiar emendations of his own, "God's not in his heaven. All's wrong with the world." When Tess had passed over the crest of the hill, he turned to go his own way, and hardly knew that he loved her still. As she drove on through Blackmoor Vale, and the landscape of her youth began to open around her, Tess aroused herself from her stupor. Her first thought was how would she be able to face her parents? She reached a turnpike gate which stood upon the highway to the village. It was thrown open by a stranger, not by the old man who had kept it for many years, and to whom, as he had been known, he had probably left on New Year's Day, the date when such changes were made. Having received no intelligence lately from her home, she asked the turnpike keeper for news. "Oh, nothing, miss," he answered. "Arlet is Marlet still. Folks have died and that. John Derbyfield too, have had a daughter married this week to a gentleman farmer, not from John's own house, you know, they was married elsewhere, the gentleman being of that high standing, that John's own folk was not considered well-be-doing enough to have any part in it, the bridegroom seeming not to know how'd have been discovered, that John is a old and ancient nobleman himself by blood, with family skeletons in their own vaults to this day, but done out of his property in the time o' the Romans. However, Sir John, as we call him now, kept up the wedding day as well as he could, and stood treat to everybody in the parish, and John's wife sung songs at the pure drop till past 11 o'clock. Hearing this, Tess felt so sick at heart that she could not decide to go home publicly in the fly with her luggage and belongings. She asked the turnpike keeper if she might deposit her things at his house for a while, and, on his offering no objection, she dismissed her carriage, and went on to the village alone by a back lane. At sight of her father's chimney, she asked herself how she could possibly enter the house. Inside that cottage, her relations were calmly supposing her far away on a wedding tour with a comparatively rich man, who was to conduct her to bouncing prosperity, while here she was, friendless, creeping up to the old door quite by herself, with no better place to go to in the world. She did not reach the house unobserved. Just by the garden edge, she was met by a girl who knew her, one of the two or three with whom as he had been intimate at school. After making a few inquiries as to how Tess came there, her friend, unheeding her tragic look, interrupted with, "But where's thy gentleman, Tess?" Tess hastily explained that he had been called away on business, and, leaving her interlocutor, clambered over the garden edge, and thus made her way to the house. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.